Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. And let's start with continuing an article about Rob Lowe. We've been talking about all the different aspects of him. Why does he, the always approachable Lowe, sometimes snub fans? Is he agoraphoric, antisocial, or hard of hearing? He's hard of hearing. Lowe has been deaf in one ear for as long as he can remember. I always am very grateful about not wanting to lose that one good ear that I have, he says. The only bummers are not getting to hear Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon in stereo, and that when I come into the house and I say, honey, my wife goes, I'm here, and I have no idea where she is because I can't hear where the sound comes from. But he is also hypervigilant about fans approaching him. I'm always worried that people are going to think I'm standoffish because I don't hear them, he says. Who the heck is Rob Lowe's wife? Naomi Watts, Cheryl Burkhoff, Kate Hudson, or Ally Sheedy? It's Cheryl Burkhoff. Lowe has been married to Cheryl, a successful makeup artist to the stars and later jewelry designer, for 33 years. The couple met on a blind date in 1983, had a fling, then reconnected on the set of 1990's Bad Influence, a movie, by the way, that Lowe says he's really proud of, ahead of its time, that people don't talk about. If you haven't seen it, go see it. The secret, he says, is picking the right person. He's quick to rattle off a list of things he loves about her. She's fascinating, puzzling, hilarious, entertaining, beautiful, sexy, and more. He stresses, though, that no relationship is perfect. We both really work on it, he said, revealing that the couple has leaned heavily into marriage counseling, though he doesn't think they have necessarily needed it. If you need it, maybe you waited too long. You get your oil changed in a car before you need it. Therapy is a life hack for us. And the last one we'll do today, which deadly disease has Lowe helped battle? Heart disease, breast cancer, or Parkinson's? It was breast cancer. Lowe lost his mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother to breast cancer, and his father, now 85, is a lymphoma survivor. So he has been very active for the past 25 years to help to fight the disease, particularly as an advocate for research and early detection of breast cancer. It's my way of honoring them and helping people really talk to their doctors about going into clinical trials, he says. Suddenly serious. It feels like every decade there's a new iteration of how I get to participate in the world to help people who are going through cancer, and it gives me a ton of satisfaction to help out. Now moving to another article in this AARP, the magazine, Real Friendship. Paddle power, three pals, and a whole lot of river. These AARP members' journey started on a lark. It lasted 20-plus years. Deb Lennox White, Ann and I were college roommates, and we've stayed close. One day in 2004, I called her to say, let's canoe down the Mississippi River for a couple of weeks. My intention was to paddle the whole river, not all in one stint, because we are still working, and eventually make it all the way to Gulf of Mexico. And surf us. At first, I didn't know about that plan, but I was all in. Deb invited another friend to come along, and I invited another Deb, my St. Olaf College buddy, Deb Knutson. From Deb Knutson, Ann and I were softball teammates. I didn't know Deb White, but when we got on the river, we were all compatible. White. Being together this way really deepened our friendships. We got to argue things out, to ponder whatever was happening in the world. Sheriff O's. We all have the same sense of humor and quirky lack of dignity, which helps when you're out on the water for a week or two. White. There were four of us for the first 4 years, and other friends joined along the way, but we three were the only ones who stuck with it. A recurring trip on the Mississippi doesn't fit into everyone's schedule, but I always came off the river really looking forward to the next year. Serve os. We took our time reaching New Orleans. We finally made it in 2016, though there was one section of river near Minneapolis that we hadn't gotten to, the Minnesota River, the connecting link between Lake Traverse and the Mississippi. We decided to head north following Eric Severide's book of Canoeing with the Cree into Canada to Hudson Bay. White. Last July, we started the third leg of that journey. We planned to end up in Hudson Bay near the Arctic Ocean. You go from an area with brown and black bears to one with grizzly bears to one with polar bears. Servos. We were shooting some rapids on the Hayes River in the pelting rain, and then we hit a rock. Knutson. When we tipped over, I gulped some water and I thought, well, that can't be good. Servos. I felt a sharp pain in my ribs, and then I realized that our Garmin satellite communication device had gone down the river. At that point, I started sobbing because I knew that our trip was over. Some of my ribs were broken, so Deb and Deb had to drag the canoe 5 miles upstream and up rapids. White. Originally, I was up for trying again this year, but I'm getting over a back injury, and I have some travel to do. And I kept thinking about us being all alone with those bears. Knutson. This summer, I'm going on a family trip to Norway that I had actually postponed in order to go to Canada last year. So I won't be going back up either, but I want to be counted in for the next time. Servos. Me? I decided I wanted to complete the Canada trip this year, so I found an outfitter that's leading a group this summer. White. Ann and I are both planning to paddle the Minnesota River this summer, too, though we won't be able to do it at the same time. But I know we'll all be out camping together again. Where we will go, I don't know. But there are a lot of rivers in the world. And one more person-related article for today, Cycling Through History. Eric Cedinho rides his bike to draw attention to routes of the past. On a bike, you feel everything, the air, the ground beneath you, the beat of your heart. You're alive in a way that's undeniable. Over the years, riding supported me physically and spiritually. It comforted me to get around using my own strength, feeling that pulse of life. As I was approaching 40, working too hard in marketing jobs, driving because I had to, I felt that sense of freedom slipping. I needed something just for me. A way to quiet the noise of events and demands. But I also wanted a challenge, so I biked from Vancouver, British Columbia, to Tijuana, Mexico. 35 days with just my thoughts as company. No music, no distractions, only the hum of the road. The next year, I rode from Miami to New York City, through plantations and swamps in the Deep South. As a person of color, alone in that landscape, I couldn't escape the layers of history around me. Freedom took on a different kind of weight. It was hanging in the air, stitched into the roads I traveled. In 2014 and 2020, I retraced the path of the Underground Railroad from New Orleans to Niagara Falls. Every mile felt like I was stepping into a story greater than mine. In 2022, I rode 1,900 miles from Fort Missoula, Montana, to St. Louis to recreate the 1897 ride of 20 black infantrymen, a unit of Buffalo soldiers who, with their commanding officer, were testing whether bikes could serve as troop transport through brutal heat and snow. I fought through 105-degree stretches in the Nebraska sandhills, trudged up Montana's steepest inclines. If I thought about quitting, my wife's voice was in my ear. You have to do this. You're bringing history to life. Now, in my 50s, these rides feel just as essential. My wife and I have a 3-year-old son, and with that comes a deeper need to understand where we came from. As a husband and father now, my trips are much shorter. I won't ride at night. I need to protect myself for my family. But there are still so many roads calling. Last summer, I spent a few days riding the Black Belt of Historic Sites around Selma, Alabama. Riding is freedom. Now back to AARP, the Bulletin, and this cover story on AARP Social Security. And I'm just reading you the sidebar articles because it's a very lengthy article. This one is entitled Social Security Simplified, Expert Answers and Guidance. For years, my Social Security payments from private sector work have been reduced because I also have a pension from public school teaching. With the repeal of WEP, W-E-P, when will I get all of that money I never got? Answer, you'll get money soon, if you haven't already, but not as much as you're hoping. For years, if you received a pension from a job that didn't pay into Social Security, maybe because you worked in the public sector, your Social Security benefits from jobs where you did pay into Social Security would usually be reduced by a rule known as the Windfall Elimination Provision, WEP. Similarly, if you were due spousal or survival benefits but also had a pension from a job not covered by Social Security, those Social Security payments would also be lowered by what's known as the Government Pension Offset, GPO. With the elimination of WEP and GPO, earlier this year, most of the estimated 3.2 million Social Security recipients affected by the change should have seen a bump in their monthly payment starting in April, according to the Social Security Administration. As for recovering what was subtracted from your past payments, the new law applies only to benefits payable for January 2024 or later. In early March, the SSA said it had made more than 1.1 million retroactive payments, averaging $6,710. Next question. If I am at full retirement age and keeping working, will FICA payroll taxes still be deducted from my wages? And if so, will that factor into my payments? Answer. If you're still clocking in, yes, you'll still have FICA taxes deducted from your paycheck to cover Medicare and Social Security. And yes, another year of work could increase your future benefits starting early the next calendar year. Those benefits are based on the 35 years of highest earnings on your Social Security record. So if you have fewer than 35 years of earnings, or if your latest ones are relatively high, you might get a lift. Here's one hypothetical. Let's say you had 15 years of low earnings and 20 years of average pay. Another year of average income will knock out one of your low income years in the SSA's formula, raising your payment about $40 a month or 2%. Question. I've been married and divorced twice. Can I collect divorced spouse benefits on both marriages? Answer. Yes, but not at the same time. Some rules. You can't collect divorce spouse benefits on a marriage if it lasted less than 10 years. You can't collect if you're remarried and are still in that marriage. And if your ex-spouse hasn't yet claimed Social Security, you can't collect on your ex's record until 2 years after your divorce. But if you have two qualifying past marriages, the SSA should pay you the higher divorced spouse benefit, assuming it's larger than the benefit based on your own record. To be sure you're getting the highest payment, contact Social Security with details of both marriages. Now, from AARP, the magazine, also about Social Security, this is the Between Us from Robert Lowe, Editor-in-Chief. Social Security, Medicare, and ARP. How to get the latest news about these programs and how to help protect them. This is the summer of milestones for America's safety net. 90 years ago this August, in the depths of the Great Depression, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act, which takes taxes from every paycheck to provide guaranteed retirement income for workers. 30 years later, on another summer day, President Lyndon B. Johnson signed the law creating Medicare, the federal health insurance program for older adults, older Americans, who supported in part by payroll taxes. In polls, these two programs remain wildly popular. It's not an exaggeration to say that these lifelines transformed aging in America. For 67 years, that's how young we are, AARP has worked to protect Social Security from arbitrary cuts to cost of living adjustments, proposals to use Social Security to pay for budget deficits, and attempts to morph Social Security into risky private accounts and Medicare into completely private insurance, and to improve Medicare coverage. And we're not stopping now. This year, Americans have faced new and worrisome questions about the safety of their earned benefits. Will Congress protect both of these crucial programs from cuts to payments or services? How can people make sure they receive their benefits from the programs they paid into? On behalf of our members, AARP has pressed the administration and Congress for promises on these three points: uninterrupted payments, timely claims processing, and decent customer service. In April, AARP's advocacy helped force the Social Security Administration to backtrack on proposed changes to its phone service, and we continue to urge SSA not to make millions of Americans jump through hoops or drive hours to fill out paperwork. Now, we are mobilizing tens of millions of our members and volunteers in a nationwide campaign to defend and protect Social Security. AARP members have already emailed and called their congressional representatives more than 2 million times. It's not too late for you to get involved. In our earlier issue, you would find an in-depth cover story laying out the main issues and ARP's concern for both Social Security and Medicare, some of which I have read to you. ARP is fighting hard to protect the benefits you have earned. For up-to-the-minute news and updates on Medicare, go to aarp.org/Medicare. Find out the latest on our efforts to save Social Security and how you can join the fight at aarp.org/Social Security. Now I'm going back to the Psychology Now episode or magazine, Take Control of Your Mind for a Happier, Healthier Life. We have moved away from it for a couple of weeks, but let's go back to understanding introverts and extroverts. For centuries, scholars and psychologists have attempted to define personality theory. Here, we explore what it means to be introvert, extrovert, or somewhere in between the two. We won't get the whole article in today, but let's give it a good start. Understanding why and how our personality is shaped and formed is an incredibly fascinating area. Nowadays, there are several major theories on personality, which include dispositional trait, perspective, psychodynamic, humanistic, biological, behaviorist, evolutionary, and social learning perspective. These are often a number of wide-ranging factors that contribute to the combination of characters or qualities that form an individual's distinctive character. There are many aspects of our personality, temperament, and dispositions that are already highly formed from the moment we're born. This is an old idea stemming from the Hippocratic in 370 BC. A concept that evolves into mainstream philosophy and medicine up until the 19th century. Then came the notion that we are also born without predispositions and that personality can actually be shaped. This concept started to feature in studies in the early 20th century. After claims from Sigmund Freud and other physicians such as Alfred Adler and Harry Sullivan, shortly after, in 1921, Swiss psychoanalyst Carl Jung published a book, Psychological Types, which laid out that people are different in essential ways. He claimed that we have a multitude of instincts that he called archetypes, and which drive us from within. Specifically, he said, that we each have a natural inclination to either extroversion or introversion, combined with our preferences for one of what he called the four basic psychological functions: thinking, feeling, sensation, and intuition. The birth of Myers-Briggs. Jungian theory is a psychodynamic perspective. It's still in use in personality type questionnaires today. It started in the 1950s when Isabel Briggs Myers, a layperson, alongside her mother, Catherine Briggs, together created a questionnaire for identifying different types of personality based on Jung's psychological types. They called it the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. The test uses Jung's idea to describe the predictable differences between the ways in which people behave in different situations and which groups personalities into eight categories: extrovert, introvert, extrovert to introvert, judging, perceiving, sensing, intuition, thinking, feeling. The Myers-Briggs model of personality focuses on how we prefer to behave rather than how we actually behave. Often, we change our preferences and natural tendencies over time, either due to patterns or preferred behaviors we've learned or inherited from friends, family, society, culture, workplace, and other environments, all of which can influence our beliefs. Our preferences, therefore, can and will often change over time. The Myers-Briggs Type Indicator questionnaire is arguably the world's leading personality test, and many organizations and businesses use this type of psychometric testing in the workplace. However, as with any kind of personality questionnaire, the results might always reveal or might not always reveal an accurate portrayal. So although tests like the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator can provide an incredibly useful framework, it's important to use the results as a guide. Individuals can then use their findings to reflect carefully on what feels true for them. What can be of more value is to bring awareness and understanding to our process and explore preferences versus actual behavior before discerning which personality type is best suited. Extrovert sparkle, introvert glow. The difference between extroversion and introversion can be boiled down to this: extroverts focus on the outer situation, whereas the introvert concentrates on inner ideas and mental concepts. Many people may have a good inkling which of the two they have a leaning towards. The Myers-Briggs model of personality is based on four preferences. 1. Where primarily do you direct your energy? 2. How do you prefer to process information? 3. How do you prefer to make decisions? 4. How do you prefer to organize your life? Ask yourself now, where do you tend to direct your energy? Toward the external world of activity and spoken words? Or is your focus on your inner world of thoughts and emotions and feelings? Introverts have a characteristic pause before actions. They direct their energy and attention inward and receive energy from their internal thoughts, feelings, and reflections. Among the characteristics of most people who prefer introversion are being drawn to their inner world, preferring to communicate by writing, being able to learn best by reflection, mental practice, having depth of interest, the tendency to reflect before acting or speaking, being private and contained, and the ability to focus readily. Extroverts focus on external events. They direct their energy and attention outward and receive energy from external events, experiences, and interactions. Some of the characteristics found in extroverts include being attuned to external environment, preferring to communicate by talking, learning best through doing or discussing, having breadth of interests, tendency to speak first, reflect later, being sociable and expressive, and taking the initiative in work and relationships. And we will learn more about this next time. Now back to the magazine and look at the big 50-50. Happy birthday, David Beckham. And his birthday was way back in May 5th. Soccer legend stays in motion with sports, kids, and good works. His playing career. At 17, the London-born Beckham made his debut with Manchester United, where he played for more than a decade. He went on to join other top teams, winning leagues titles in four countries, including the U.S. He is now part owner of Inter Miami. Celeb couple. He is married to Victoria Beckham, a singer with the Spice Girls, now a fashion designer. His charity work. In 2015, he launched Seven, the David Beckham UNICEF Fund, to help children in need around the world. Words of wisdom. I want to show my kids that now, after Dad's main first part of his life, he still continues to work hard, Beckham told the Fatherhood website. We have a couple more milestone birthdays here from way back in the April and May. Andre 3000, Outkast rapper, played wind instruments on his 2023 instrument album New Blue Sun, turned 50 on May 27th. On April 4th, Robert Downey Jr. turned 60. Iron Man actor made his Broadway debut last year in the one-act play McNeil. Pauline Poretskova, April 9th, turned 60. Supermodel's 2022 memoir No Filter explored topics of aging and grief. Martin Lawrence, on April 16th, he turned 60. Comedian co-starred in the fourth installment of the Bad Boys film franchise last year. And finally here, the last person we have to talk about today is Deborah Winger, who on May 16th turned 70. This actor has also written a book, taught at Harvard, and produced documentaries. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And I thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.